from WNYC Studios. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Monday, March 18th. It was an unusual St. Patrick's Day politically as Ireland's Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, met with President Biden in Washington. They spoke to reporters less about Dublin or D.C. and more about Gaza. And listeners, if you didn't know, the Irish people have long had a reputation as perhaps the most sympathetic in Europe to the plight of the Palestinians. Addressing Biden and reporters, Prime Minister Varadkar yesterday affirmed that and gave a reason why.
Mr. President, as you know, the Irish people are deeply troubled about the catastrophe that's unfolding before our eyes in Gaza. And when I travel the world, leaders often ask me why the Irish have such empathy for the Palestinian people. And the answer is simple. We see our history in their eyes.
The Irish had their long history of being under occupation, and they identify. But if Varadkar wants something different in Gaza because he's Irish, Chuck Schumer wants it too because he's Jewish.
My last name is Schumer, which derives from the Hebrew word shomer, or guardian. Of course, my first responsibility is to America and to New York. But as the first Jewish majority leader of the United States Senate and the highest ranking Jewish elected official in America ever, I also feel very keenly my responsibility as a Shomer Yisrael, a guardian of the people of Israel.
The Senate Majority Leader from Brooklyn, whose 45-minute floor speech on Thursday is making waves around the world, opening with that declaration of his identity before saying the Israeli government has been, quote, too willing to tolerate the civilian toll in Gaza, as he put it, calling Prime Minister Netanyahu an obstacle to peace and calling for new elections there. On CNN's State of the Union yesterday, Netanyahu hit back at Schumer.
I think what he said is totally inappropriate. It's inappropriate for to go to a sister democracy and try to replace the elected leadership there. That's something that Israel, the Israeli public, does on its own, and we're not a banana republic.
Prime Minister Netanyahu on CNN State of the Union, and we'll start there on this March 18th with NPR congressional correspondent Claudia Grisales, who covered the Schumer speech. Hi, Claudia. Thanks for coming on with us just on WNYC when you usually are speaking to hundreds of NPR stations around the country. Welcome and good morning.
Oh, thank you so much. So good to be with you.
Before we talk about reaction in Congress, would you remind us of the larger context of Schumer's speech? Because Netanyahu was only one of four obstacles to peace that Schumer cited, as you reported. So what company did he put Netanyahu in?
Well, it was a very difficult position that he put Netanyahu in. And of course, as Schumer, as we heard him say, he's the highest ranking elected Jewish official in our country. So his words really triggered a political earthquake, if you will. It was really stunning to see Schumer make these remarks. But really, this is ultimately a culmination of quiet concerns that Democrats have been expressing about Netanyahu and the path that he's on. And some have raised concerns that it is focused on a war path. And so this was Schumer largely echoing a lot of those worries.
The Netanyahu clip that we played from CNN, where he spoke back to Schumer by saying Israel is not a banana republic. That's quite a phrase. Is it clear to you how he meant that term, banana republic, in this context?
Not exactly clear. It could have been a dig, perhaps, that he was trying to strike towards Schumer and his remarks, and also trying to solidify the trust that he still does have with many lawmakers, especially Republicans who use those Schumer remarks to say they continue to stand with Israel, and perhaps they are the only party that stands with Israel. So Republicans saw a real opportunity here in terms of that alignment.
And here is that other clip of Schumer from the speech, also near the beginning, that maybe speaks to the politics he's trying to reflect in Jewish America.
I speak for myself, but I also speak for so many mainstream Jewish Americans, a silent majority whose nuanced views on the matter have never been well represented in this country's discussions about the war in Gaza.
So Claudia Schumer, besides being the highest-ranking Jewish elected official in the history of this country, has also been a staunch supporter of Israel his whole long political career, and I think that context matters, and certainly after October 7th. So is it clear to you what caused him to give that speech now?
I think it was a buildup of these frustrations with Netanyahu. I think Democrats are seeing a growing weakness when it comes to addressing the conflict with Israel, with Gaza, and the concerns that Israel has gone too far, if you will. We saw hundreds of thousands of voters across the country cast their ballots in Democratic primaries for uncommitted, for not choosing to not select a candidate. We saw this in Michigan initially, where we saw the uncommitted choice gain 100,000 votes there. And I traveled with the president a few weeks ago to Illinois. We could see these large protests, the concerns in terms of the path that Israel was taking in this conflict with Gaza. So Democrats are in part speaking to this frustration within their own party that not enough support is being given to Gaza in this conflict, and Israel has truly gone too far. And so At one end, they are trying to address this weakness and this concern, especially in an election year. It's critical for them.
I've heard the speech criticized as political and maybe not genuine, according to his critics, for the election year, both from Republicans and from Palestinians and others who are pro-Palestinian. People from both of those camps are saying, look, Schumer and Biden are reacting to the disaffection being felt by many younger Democrats especially, and to the vote uncommitted movement that you just cited. Does your reporting seem to back up that those politics would be at play, not simply Schumer himself and other Democrats in Congress getting disaffected after this many months and this amount of death and destruction in Gaza?
Yes, it could be very well a part of it. One of my colleagues suggested that perhaps Schumer's taking cover for Biden and other Democrats by taking this position. Some may say he went rogue, he's alone in this, Schumer went too far in his remarks. But in the end, there's arguments that he's trying to take cover for Democrats. And yes, there could be some political calculations that are being made here as well in an election year that will prove to be a tough one for Democrats versus Republicans, for the White House and on down.
Schumer could have just said he now supports cutting off U.S. military aid to Israel until they start fighting the war in the more civilian-conscious way that he says he wants. But he didn't. He only held that open as a possibility at some undefined point in the future. So do you have any reporting on why Schumer didn't just do that? Because without that, the Palestinian or pro-Palestinian critique that it's just words has to at least be answered, right? The reality, it's not just Israel's war in Gaza. It's the United States war, too, because we're paying for it, part of it. So rather than lecture Netanyahu or say what Schumer wants that country's electoral schedule to be, he could just take responsibility for this country and say, that's it, we're cutting you off from our treasury until you act in accordance with the human rights standards that we, the United States, believe in. So do you know if he's been asked why he didn't take action on U.S. policy that's there to be taken rather than lecture Israel on what it should do?
You know, it seems to me that Schumer's taking a first major step in terms of speaking out against Netanyahu. And we have heard a lot of concerns, bipartisan concerns, about the money that we have directed towards Israel, that this country has directed towards this conflict, and how it's being used and whether it should be based on certain conditions, what have you. There is one issue for Congress right now, is they cannot get a foreign aid bill passed in either in both chambers at this time, and get something to Biden's desk. So that effort is stalled right now. So it could be a possibility that Schumer would be jumping too far ahead if he talked about the aid, a potential aid, additional aid that could be considered for Israel. And so that is still being sorted. There's still a potential the House could could take up some sort of legislation. There's still a potential something could be passed out of Congress. So it's a very sensitive, touchy subject right now for members. And perhaps he's leaving the door open on what those next steps could look like and some really tough negotiations that continue at this moment on that aid.
By the way, we're going to get with Claudia to at least one other political story that might also be seen as a political watershed. Mike Pence, the other day, this may have gotten lost in all the news about Gaza and local news. Mike Pence said he's not going to endorse Donald Trump for president. But here's part of Republican leader Mitch McConnell's response to Schumer on the floor on Thursday after Schumer spoke.
Make no mistake. The Democratic Party doesn't have an anti-BB problem. It has an anti-Israel problem.
So there's Mitch McConnell hoping to capitalize for the Republicans with Jewish voters, and we'll get to that. President Biden talked about the issue, too, yesterday on what would normally be a more festive and ceremonial St. Patrick's Day appearance with the Prime Minister, also called the Taoiseach of Ireland. We played the clip earlier of that Prime Minister, or Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, saying the Irish people identify with Palestinians because Ireland, too, had its history of being under occupation. And so Biden said this.
And the Taoiseach and I agree about the urgent need to increase humanitarian aid in Gaza and get the ceasefire deal. Get a ceasefire deal that brings the hostages home and move toward a two-state solution.
But as the New York Times points out today, while Mr. Biden has struck a sharper tone recently, like Schumer, the White House has said there are no plans to leverage military aid to Israel. So, Claudia, you're a congressional correspondent, not a White House or presidential or campaign one, but anything you can report on where Biden thinks this goes next from his standpoint, as Netanyahu seems impervious to any of these new rebukes, as Netanyahu himself said on CNN yesterday?
Yeah, that's going to be a very difficult path forward in terms of how the president balances the concerns that surround Netanyahu, you know, combined with these recent remarks from Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. And in terms of that path forward, that is what remains to be seen in terms of how he tries to strike that balance. It's going to be a very, very difficult road ahead.
Is there a tricky Democratic Party political calculus now, specifically on which could cost them more congressional seats or the presidential election, losing pro-Israel Jewish voters or losing pro-Palestinian voters who are newly energized and alienated in an election salient way around the issue, as we see in the uncommitted votes in presidential primaries, even though they think Trump would almost certainly be worse? You think there are, or do you have reporting that indicates Democratic strategists are meeting and looking at polling, which might be very difficult on this, to figure, are we going to lose more congressional districts or swing states in the presidential by alienating a certain number of Jews or by alienating a certain number of Palestinian supporters?
Yeah, this is definitely a concern for Democrats, and I imagine that many are assessing kind of the impact, the damage control potential in terms of what they could do in terms of addressing the concerns on both sides of this issue and what's going to be most beneficial in the end in terms of the political approach that they take here. It is going to be a very tough test for Democrats. And this is what they're trying to figure out at this moment.
Right. So it's a very difficult calculus. And I guess it goes district by district.
Right.
It goes state by state. And control of the Senate is also up for grabs this election year. For you as a congressional correspondent, are you watching any states in particular that one party or the other is hoping to flip?
Yes. For example, when it comes to the Senate races, I'm watching very closely the state of Arizona, where that's going to be a very tough battle for that seat. As we know, Kyrsten Sinema, the independent former Democratic member, resigned her seat in terms of not running for re-election again, although she was facing a very tough re-election fight if she was going to run again, especially as an independent. And we know that Democrats are really eyeing this state as an opportunity to regain that seat. We know a House member, Representative Gallego, is running in that seat, but he's facing a really tough match with Carrie Lake, the Republican, who has been on the Hill, who has visited Capitol Hill recently to meet with members and build up support in all spaces of her party in terms of trying to see if she can try and pull off a win in this state. So Arizona is definitely one of those key Senate races I'll be watching.
Listener writes, Mark from Brooklyn, been a longtime fan of Chuck Schumer, but I believe this time he is off target. Poll after poll in Israel indicate that the majority of Israelis do want Mr. Netanyahu to continue the campaign in Gaza, perhaps with even more force, and to even reduce the aid going into Gaza as some additional leverage against Hamas. So turning this war strategy into a purely Netanyahu objective is dishonest, in my opinion, writes that caller, Mark from Brooklyn. All right, we've just got a couple of minutes left, Claudia, and I am going to change the subject to Mike Pence. As I mentioned, the other another big story coming out of national politics in the last few days, he said he's not going to support Donald Trump. Did that come as a surprise to many Republicans?
It may have, just because we've seen members such as Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell say they would support the former president as the nominee for the party. And even though folks like McConnell said, I'll endorse whoever is nominated, McConnell had some very strong words for the former president when the president had to undergo his final Senate impeachment trial. And he pointed to voters, he pointed to the justice system, to resolving the Trump problem in a sense. And so maybe it was a bit of a surprise, but when you look at the evolution of Mike Pence and his place in the Republican Party, ever since January 6th, he made that fated decision not to go along with the then president's plans to try to help him overturn the election results in 2020. That began a new political journey for Pence. And he even tried to run against the president in terms of the Republican primary at one point, and he has spoken out against Donald Trump. And so it's pretty clear that he is sticking to his position that Trump made a massive error in judgment, especially at the end of his term, and that he does not deserve another opportunity to be in the Oval Office again. He's very much on an island on this in this moment in terms of many top Republicans from the Trump administration. But in terms of his evolution, it was clearly pointing in this direction that he would not endorse the president again.
Right. And any other congressional Republicans, based on your reporting, echoing Pence, like if we've been talking about Schumer giving cover to other Democrats to be more critical of Netanyahu and the way Israel is prosecuting the war in Gaza, does Pence in a way give cover to other evangelicals or other congressional Republicans, of sort of any stripe to come out and say, look, I'm a real Republican? But what Donald Trump did on January 6th is just unconscionable, and I can't support him. Even though we should make clear, Pence said he's certainly not voting for Joe Biden either.
Right.
Or is Pence really on an island, as you put it?
Right now, at this moment, he is. But as you mentioned, perhaps he's providing cover for other Republicans who will come and speak out. Of course, we know of some who continue to keep their stance, such as Liz Cheney, the former member of Congress, former member of the January 6th Select Committee in the House, who continue to speak out against former President Trump. And so perhaps Pence will inspire other Republicans to follow his lead, but that remains to be seen.
Claudia Grisales, NPR congressional correspondent, thanks for giving us this time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.